Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2007 documentary Young at Heart, directed by Stephen Walker and Sally George.
Yeah, we are.
And starring old people. So, Brother Drew, this is your pick. This is on your list, as a matter of fact. So, bring us in.
Yeah, I put this movie on the calendar originally just to do right after the Jay-Z documentary. Mostly because I was in a musical mood when I was updating the calendar, and I consider this to be a musical movie. But on top of that, when I watched this movie back in 2008, 2009, it really moved me, and it's always stuck with me. So I was really interested to watch it again with you guys and to chat about it and see what you thought about it.
Well, in what way did it move you?
Well, you know, when I first saw this, you know, both Grandma and Aunt Riva were still alive. So they were kind of the old folks in my life. So it made me think about them, especially Riva, because she was a little bit more incapacitated than our grandmother. And it just made me think about how, you know, these people towards the end of their life really seem to find a purpose and to really, really thrive. And we can talk about it more as we get into the movie, but one of the things that I was surprised about this movie is the musical director, the guy who kind of puts everything together. Like, the fact that it's old people singing, you know, contemporary or, you know, classic rock songs, it's not simply a gimmick for him. I mean, yeah, it's a gimmick, but he takes it really seriously and he wants them to be good and he pushes them and he... You know, he doesn't mollycoddle them just because they're old. You know, and he could be pretty brutal sometimes. But, you know, he treated them like real people. So, yeah, I thought this was a really interesting movie from that standpoint.
Brother Jay?
I had a very, very difficult time making it through this movie. I have a hard time with any exposition where people are... seemingly unaware that they may be being exploited a little bit, also where they may be being poked fun a little bit, and when somebody is taking advantage of that to profit. So I have a hard time with the judge shows and the music shows and the talent shows and all that, and this is kind of one of those extensions of that for me. So from that perspective, it was kind of hard to watch. Plus listening to people sing badly is also very cringeworthy for me. So, it was difficult to get through.
So you thought the old people were being, exploited?
I believe to some degree they were being exploited. Now, the debate is, was it with their full knowledge, and was it to their detriment? Or to their benefit? You know, there's a whole debate in there. Cause the guy, doing it, you know, I kept asking myself, why is he doing this? It's never clearly defined. You know, he never comes out with, this is why I'm doing this.
Well, let's get into a quick plot summary. This is provided to us by Fox Searchlight Films, the distributor, I'm sure, of this movie. And this is a documentary that documents the true story of the final weeks of rehearsal for the Young at Heart chorus in New Hampton, Massachusetts. And in Northampton, Mass.
Home of Smith College, I believe.
Whose average age of this chorus is 81 years old. Many of whom must overcome health adversities to participate. Their music is unexpected, going against a stereotype of their age group, performing songs, for example, by James Brown and Sonic Youth. Although they have toured Europe and sang for royalty, this account focuses on preparing new songs, not an easy endeavor, for a concert in their hometown, which succeeds in spite of several heartbreaking events.
Yeah, but you know going into it what the heartbreaking events are.
Oh yeah, these people are like 80 and 90 years old. Someone's going to die.
Yeah.
And, okay, the chorus director, let's talk about him. His name is Bob Sillman. He himself is 53 years old, and I didn't realize that even though he is the chorus director, he is also part of the chorus. He is out front singing along. I don't know if that's routine for a chorus director.
Sometimes. Like, I don't know what your experience with music class was, but when I was in music class, you know, our music teacher would absolutely get in and sing with us.
Yeah, I have zero experience in music class.
Am I the only one who really flourished in music class?
Oh, Drew certainly liked taking chorus class in junior high.
I did?
I believe so.
No, I did not. I did not pursue music classes. Actually, my chorus class is part of this like sort of vocational rotation where each quarter we did something different. I forget what the fourth one was, but there was chorus, there was metal shop, and there was wood shop, and maybe computers was the fourth one.
Yeah. See, so I don't know anything about chorus or choral singing, and although it's funny because I actually, as it turns out, in my hopefully closer to middle age than old age, but I quite like singing. I'm not any good at it, but I quite enjoy it. And maybe I'm just less shy about doing it in front of other people. But the folks in this movie, the folks in this choral group, are definitely having a good time singing. They enjoy it. It is like a big part of their life. In some cases, probably the biggest part of their life.
Well, I think they enjoy it when they're performing for crowds. I don't think they enjoy it when they're rehearsing all the time.
Well, but they go every time.
Sure. But they weren't always enjoying the rehearsal.
Oh, no. And, some of these songs are hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because it was hard work.
Some of the songs, like I thought the Sonic Youth song was frankly unfair.
I went away to see an old friend of mine. His sister came over, she was out of her mind. Her light eyes were dancing, she is insane. Her brother says she's just a bitch with the golden chain. She keeps coming closer, saying I can feel it in my bones. Schizophrenia is taking me home.
Because it seems like, the songs that they showed in performances were songs that most people knew, that most of the audience would know, that really played on the gimmick of the old person singing like an angry or excited young person kind of song. And or either that or like the choral pun of Staying Alive, for instance.
Yeah, they should have sang Lust for Life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like Forever Young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, at that moment in the movie, I thought was really touching.
No, okay, so let's talk about the movie production a little bit, because I definitely have thoughts about this. Although we'll get back to exploiting the elderly. And by the way, here's giving you my first impression. I at first had a little bit of difficult time watching the movie, because to me, especially the camera things they did. They did a lot of like really close-ups with almost a, like a fisheye lens in such a way as that it looked like it was on purpose, like a really subtle Christopher Guest movie.
And well, I think my problem with it was that when they were doing rehearsal, the volume was like cranked to a million. And when they were not in rehearsal and actually having interview portions, the volume was like -5. And so I was constantly having to scramble back and forth with the volume.
See, I didn't notice that too much. It also disturbed me because I thought Bob Sillman, the director, looked a lot like a taller Harry Shearer.
Yeah, he did. He had some of that going on.
And he was definitely playing for the camera.
He was mugging it up.
Totally, yeah. He was totally. And I think probably some of the old people were too when they were directly interviewed.
He was an overcooked ham.
Well, you see a lot of like Bob Sillman sort of directing, and even in their rehearsals. And you see a lot of them, you know, just kind of more candid poses. But he's definitely, I don't think you ever see a candid shot of him.
No. No, he really liked being in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Which, again, is fine. But it was just, it was obviously, you know, he was the thread or the intro to the whole thing. Except that also, they did something that I don't really like usually with directors. And that's the director is actually heard. Like the interviewer actually becomes part of the program for a little bit. And I realize if I was a filmmaker, I know I would do this on purpose. Because I couldn't resist somehow getting in there. But to me, it's a little distracting.
You don't like hearing the director like ask the interview questions?
It's not the interview questions themselves, but like when they do the little outtakes when he's just chit-chatting with the people.
He was acting more like he was a reporter. And so I think from the documentary standpoint, it works fine. If it were a movie, a full production movie, it would be a different issue. But I think the fact that he was, you know, largely acting as reporter in the capacity, I respected that.
Yeah, well, it's true that the documentary filmmaker is a journalist of some kind.
Yeah, so I took it in the spirit of documentary, being he was the reporter trying to make sure that everything was explained well enough through the reportage that the audience understood.
So you think of the candid moments of the director behind the scenes saying, hold on while we reset something, or fiddling around in the car, you think that was to give it more like authenticity?
I appreciated it. Okay. I mean, it certainly was, you know, it certainly made it feel more homemade and less produced, because it was a little less polished, just a little less produced.
Yeah, there were some parts of it that were really polished, though.
Yeah.
Like transitions between the music videos, or like when we saw the Harmonicats part of that song. That was an especially like fisheye lens kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I think that was also like a music video.
Yeah,
production. It was. Yeah. So, shall we talk about the individual performers?
Sure.
Do we have I actually did take some notes. The main characters that I saw were, of course, the chorus director, Bob Sillman, age 53. And then Eileen Hall, who is 92, a sassy British lady.
Should I stay or should I go? That's a punk song, isn't it?
I would say so. Shit. Have you ever heard it before?
Oh, it's tease, tease, tease.
You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day's fair, the other's black. So if you want me off your back, then you gotta let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Who used to be what, like a dancer?
She was like, she was a dancer.
Like a fan dancer or something.
Well, fairly exotic dancer, because she had some outfits that were very risque.
So, and she was a sassy, flirty woman, which at 92 is pretty great.
Yeah. Actually reminded me in some ways of our grandmother. So.
Yes. And then there was, or even Grandma Jo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's actually who I thought of like when I first saw her.
And then we have Fred Niddle, age 80, who reminded me a little bit of Hoyt Axton.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon the trail he rested as he went along his way, when all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw a-riding through the ragged sky and up a cloudy draw. Yippee-i-yay, yippee-i-yo, ghost riders in the sky.
That was a song that we sang and started the show off, and that seemed to go over pretty well. We did that all over Europe. You know, we went from continent to continent until I became incontinent, and then we didn't go any further.
The large in size and also in personality, baritone, with he's on oxygen for congestive heart failure, and I thought he was marked for death from the beginning, but spoiler, he survives, and actually does one of the more poignant parts of the movie. Plus, I think he probably has the best voice of everybody.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, he sang Ghost Riders in the Sky, which obviously he had sung before. But, you know, at the end, he sang Fix You by Coldplay.
When you try your best, but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. When you feel so tired that you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, and tears come streaming down your face when you lose something you can't replace. When you love someone and it goes to waste, could it be worse? Lights will
you know, this movie was my introduction to that song.
Yeah, I have never heard it except for this one.
The audience can't see Brother Jay rolling his eyes so hard he almost fell over.
And then we have the couple. Well, they're a real couple, but the duet of Stan Goldman, age 76, and Dora Morrow, age 83, who did I Feel Good, or I Got You. So I know this is a gimmick, it's a trick, but I like the way that they showed you that they were really arranging these songs to complement the performers. I mean, They made a different arrangement of the music to do what they were trying to do, or basically maybe accommodate the fact that they weren't, you know, this was not like a professional level singers.
It's clear that they moved the octave down and they slowed the pace down, which is what you do anytime a singer ages. If you watch an Elton John show now, he's not going to sing in the same range as he did, and he's not going to sing as fast as he did. He will still hit some of the notes, but the arrangement will be different. So this is homegrown customization. So I appreciate that from a production value. And that you're right. They really made an effort to make sure that they were playing up the talents of the performer they had to make sure that it was optimized.
Well, and from the Sonic Youth song, you know, there's a question of whether or not they were ever going to make it make sense.
Yeah, and that was actually a really interesting part of the movie, I thought, was they didn't dive too deeply into this, but there was this phenomenon with, you know, sort of the older choir that when they were learning songs, that they really needed to connect to and understand the lyrics to really make it work. So some of these newer songs where it was the meanings were unclear, they were really struggling with. And they weren't necessarily struggling with the words themselves, but more the syntax, because they couldn't wrap their heads around the meaning.
Well, I think later in the movie you see I've forgotten his name already, but the you know, the Coldplay song where he's actually watching the video.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's practicing along with the video at home, yeah. Which is
so
actually, yeah.
I mean, that's give him credit for that. First of all, finding the video, but second of all, you know, sitting through that would give you some understanding that maybe you didn't have. Although, right. Again, you're getting imagery from somebody else, which, you know, I always have a problem with music videos that aren't fairly literal to the song, because, like, I don't always want someone else's imagery in a song. That's why it makes the song so personal.
Yeah, but sometimes it's the imagery that makes the song.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Like the video for Jeremy, like, really, really brought home that song.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure I would have gotten it. You know, that was the first time I heard it, so it's hard to pick that apart. But it would... It seemed like it fit just fine. I don't know. I guess maybe you could take any song and, say, take a Waiting for Guffman-style group of people and make it god-awful. I don't know. I mean, some of the other characters, Bob Salvini performed Every Breath You Take. There was another Bob, whose name I can't remember. There was Joe Benoit, or Benoit, I think it's probably Benoit, age 83. He was the front and center main guy on the posters for their Alive and Well tour, or Alive and Well performance that they were getting ready for. Probably the big opening of their Alive and Well tour. And here, spoiler, by the opening night, he was neither alive nor well.
Yeah, and he was really one of the rocks in the foundation of this choir, because he was one of the few who could pick up lyrics really quickly.
Oh, yeah, from day one. Well, and that's the other thing I thought was impressive was, you know, these are old people and they have some old people issues. I mean, obviously not a lot of dementia issues, because you have to have your mental faculties to get all these things down. But
that's not necessarily true. People with dementia actually do very well with music because of how they integrate it into their brain.
Ah, okay. All right.
So it has to do with the motor neurons firing and how the synapses react. But music is actually very, very positive for memory.
Okay. Well, I will stand corrected there.
That's why when you sing your ABCs, that's why little kids learn to sing it. Because, you know, if you can associate the singing with the letters, then it helps recall the memory. Anyway.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to think of a smooth transition, but as normal, I can't.
L-M-N-O-P.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of smooth transitions, as it turns out. A lot of times, I just say, exactly, and then move right on. Or I say...
or very nice.
Yeah, or I actually just repeat exactly what you say, and then I have to cut it out. And then I just... so it's me, it sounds like I just say, well, exactly, and I'm going on. Or even worse, I just go right on as if you weren't talking at all, which is... anyway. Exactly. I should just get a whole bunch of those. I think I could probably edit a podcast where I wasn't involved, but just edit my general reactions in there, and nobody would notice.
Broadcast news style.
Exactly.
So
that's a movie we need to do, by the way.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yes. Yeah, we need to do comedies that also have social commentary. Because comedies that don't have social commentary aren't always the most successful podcasts.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Yeah. Sometimes we can squeeze a good story out of there, but sometimes not. Okay, my point before was that, so you have all these people with different physical abilities and different ages and just different levels of experience and talent for singing and talent for memorization and, you know, just basically different levels of articulation, maybe. Is that a word? Or it's a word, but is it appropriate? I'm not sure. You also, you know, so for all that, so you pour in this song like Alan Toussaint's Yes We Can has a lot of cans in that song. That was a big deal in the movie, was that they had to...
71 cans.
Yeah, they had to incorporate all these words that are kind of gibberish and they didn't really understand, and it was really fast.
Can you do it?
No. I think I can. I think I can. If I want, I can. Think I can. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. I know darn well I can. Yes, I can. Them words are too hard to put there.
And yet there are people that are saying, you know, okay, or in a Sonic Youth song as well, they're like, oh, we hate this song. This is horrible. And he's like, well, should we scrap it? And they're like, no, we're not going to scrap it. We're going to do it. Don't get me wrong. We are still going to do this until it's done.
They like the challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at least the people that, you know, were they focused on, I mean, they really made it a point. This was a big part of their lives. You know, nothing was going to prevent them from being there except for impending death.
Or death.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't feel that they were being exploited. I mean, they, for all of the folks featured in this movie, I thought it was fairly obvious that, you know, this was one of the things that they really lived for. You know, they looked forward to coming to practice and to working hard and, you know, to trying new stuff.
Well, and theoretically, the chorus paid for all of their travel and lodging, because if they had to spend their own money to do travel and lodging to perform for this group who sold tickets, then
I will find him and kill him.
Yeah, well, then that is kind of abusive. Although, is it more abusive than, say, some sort of kids group where you end up taking kids all over the place? Or like a competitive kids' athletic program where you spend thousands of dollars a year, and then if your kid's any good, you spend thousands more to send them to tournaments and stuff.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. I've seen this for other people's kids. Hopefully my child will not be talented enough to do any of these things. Actually, maybe I shouldn't wish that.
Yeah.
Dream big.
Terrible. Jeez.
Dream big, Uncle Eric.
Need to edit that out.
Okay. All right.
Jeez.
Let me tell you, do you know how much hockey sticks cost? A hockey stick can be $300 a piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And?
Yeah. Turns out you break hockey sticks.
Yeah, you break violins, and I still got one.
Yeah.
What, you going all who at the end of your violin recitals?
It was a tangent on my own little rant. So yeah, I didn't really see the exploitation, although I did think it was kind of a carnival trick what Bob was doing. What the chorus itself mm-hmm. was kind of a we want to show you this thing that's wacky.
And yeah, but he wanted to get himself on stage. That's exploitative.
No, but okay, I'm going to skip to the end of as far as my analysis here, because I don't have a lot of notes. But when immediately I saw the text that Brother Jay was not into this movie, and I know that Drew was into this movie, so I knew there was already going to be this kind of thing. You know, when I watched it, I was like, ooh, okay, I can see some of Brother Jay's thing. And then, you know, it is a charming story. You know, it's a story of these folks who, you know, there's real consequences because we end up facing death. Because they're all old, so they're all going to die.
And there's some very sweet and touching parts of this movie, too. I don't want to say that it's a bad movie. I just, parts of it really did not sit well with me.
Well, and there's no villain, right? That's the one thing I noticed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, there's a villain.
Is Bob the villain?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't see a villain at all.
I didn't either. I actually respected Bob more for how tough he was on the group.
Oh, yeah, because you're right. He treated them like adults. Because it turns out they are adults. Sorry, something's going upstairs.
I was like, oh, God, somebody's breaking into my attic.
If I have to leave quickly, you'll know what happened. So my daughter can't sleep. It is like 83 degrees in the house, so that makes it more difficult. Anyway, so here are the thoughts I had. So this is a trick. It is a carnival trick. You are, as an audience, you are paying money to see old people sing songs, sometimes not well, but enthusiastically, and songs that are, you know, it's kind of, you know, shocking to hear.
It's shticky.
Yeah, it's shticky, and it's also, you know, it kind of subverts your expectations, and that's part of the fun. And they play songs that you know so you can sing along, and people were singing along and clapping and really get into the enthusiasm. And so what I like about this movie and what I like about this group is that it celebrates folks that are enthusiastically pursuing art, even though they're not technically super proficient at it, which is the definition of this podcast. I mean, that's the one thing I can say about our podcast is we are enthusiastic and not extremely professional. You know, this isn't super polished. Now we're not presenting this as a shtick. You know, we're not getting on stage and charging money for this, but I've seen lots of other performances where this, you know, that's the case. I mean, Weird Al is all about this kind of thing. I mean, he is technically very, very proficient, but, I actually got to see the Reduced Shakespeare Company do a performance. Actually, it turns out I think it was about America. But that's all a shtick. And so, you know, that part of the performance I thought was fine. But yeah, I mean, technically, would I buy their album? I'm not so sure. I mean, it's no worse than Kids Bop or whatever. Are you familiar with that?
I am.
Nope.
Yeah, it's kids singing popular music, so you can listen to kids saying Taylor Swift, Shake It Off, or I can't think of any popular songs, like Uptown Funk or whatever, and they'll change the words just slightly if there are swear words.
I'm hurting, baby, I'm broken down, I need you here, I need you now, when I'm without you, I'm something weak, you got me begging, begging. I just wanna be here with your love, and it's killing me when you're away.
don't care where you are. I just want to be there where you are. And I gotta see you in that place. Sugar.
I mean, they're not singing like Hova or whatever that, what is that? now I can't think of a single Jay-Z song except for
99 Problems.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and that's a thing. And I think a lot of kids' music is a thing like that. It's a trick. It's like juggling. Juggling is a trick. Magic is a trick. And, you know, if you want to be in that audience, great. Enjoy it. Lap it up. You know, if I want to go see a magic show, I don't want to be looking for wires. I think Pete Holmes mentioned this in his latest thing. It's like he doesn't want to be like looking for mirrors. He wants to be impressed with magic.
Yeah. I think the thing that touched me about this movie was, you know, the relationships that, you know, the members of this choir really formed with each other. And the way that they reacted to tragedy, because they have certainly seen a lot of it, and it's none of it is unexpected to them anymore. So I think when they got the news that Bob died,
Bob the director lives,
right. No, Bob Salvini, who was part of the duet that was going to perform Fix You. You know, the way they reacted was really kind of muted and reserved. And I think it was really obvious that they have all seen a lot of death of their loved ones. So they were certainly sad. But they were also just kind of ready to move on. Because it was not unusual for them, and just that phenomenon itself, I thought was kind of heartbreaking, and then to have to experience it again when Joe died too, and this to see them soldier on, I thought was really touching.
So I'm going to be the bad guy here. I'm not trying to minimize death, of course, because you know we've certainly had our share of family members pass away, but is it really tragic when they die at 89?
Well, in the context of it being your friend, sure.
Well, no, I mean, it's sad, but is it a tragedy?
I can see your point, and you don't get to be 83 or 92 without a bunch of people dying.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I think when they were talking and they were all bummed. I mean, understandably, I would be upset and bummed too if one of my friends died. Just, you know, I'm 80 and my friends are 80 and one of them drops dead. I'd be like, damn it. But also I'd be like, well, you had a good run.
Yeah.
So I think that's some of the spirit that was there is that, you know, well, it sucks certainly and it's depressing. But we're going to, you know, as they said, our best tribute is that we're going to pick up and go on.
Yeah. Well, I can't anticipate, nor could I ever anticipate what our Aunt Reva would have thought about it, but I'm pretty comfortable thinking our grandmother would have enjoyed this movie just because, you know, it showed old people being spunky, and that's what she was like. And, you know, and she did a lot of things, you know, after she retired. Like, she was briefly part of, like, a bell choir and a couple other things. she did, like, some sort of, like, pearl beading class or something, some sort of beading class she did, you know, and it didn't really take, but, you know, she was trying to kind of get out there and,
Well, she also did square dancing for a long time.
Well, yeah, that was a post-divorce thing. That was,
Yeah, I know, but, I mean, that's embarrassing enough.
No, she loved it.
I know.
Yeah.
She's proud of it. I mean, good for her.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that, like, that I can really appreciate now. Like, I can imagine, if nothing else, to embarrass my child, you know, performing in something like this just because it would be fun to do so. And if you could make people laugh, then even better, you know? And it's, you know, again, it's a little bit like the juggling thing, you know, because you could be a technically very good juggler, but that doesn't really hold people's attention. If you're a decent juggler and funny, you know, or if you're a magician, if you have a couple really solid tricks, but are very, like, entertaining, like that Fred guy. I mean, even though Fred had those silly jokes about his wife.
What have you two been married for?
54 years.
You heard me say the other day that we stayed together for the kids. She didn't want them, either did I.
Well, that wasn't true. That's just silly.
And we did things romantically. We went dining and dancing twice a week. I went Tuesday, she went Thursday. And then we had, our marriage was built on faith and trust. She had no faith in me and I didn't trust her.
It's not a great joke by any means, and he probably told it a million times. In fact, his wife was rolling her eyes, much like Brother Jay, when he was telling it, because he was hamming it up for the camera, too. But you can understand that, you know, if that guy tells a story with that rich voice, you're going to be interested in that, or at least I am going to be interested in hearing that story.
No, he was Grandpa Clyde level of storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, an entertainer. You can see him, like, sitting, you know, like, as, like, any number of, like, MC positions. Maybe not a DJ, but maybe an MC. Wick, wick,
wick. MCP paints.
Yeah, and his performance of Fix You is really sort of the emotional climax of the movie. And I thought it was really well done.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And, you know, I thought that whole Yes We Can song also. I mean, obviously this is all edited to have a particular story being told. So all the songs they picked were pretty great. I mean, here's a list of the songs that they sing in the movie. Of course, Fix You by Coldplay. I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones. Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. Golden Years. I Got You. Or I Feel Good by James Brown. The Golden Years, by the way, by David Bowie. Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix. Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash. Yes We Can by Alan Toussaint. Every Breath You Take by The Police. Forever Young by Bob Dylan. And Schizophrenia by Sonic Youth. And that's a good wide range, you know, example. I mean, you can't go too far afield. Like, I think even the Sonic Youth song, depending on what audience you're playing it for, you know, you're basically just going for shock value. And because Bob happened to be a Sonic Youth fan.
Yeah.
But Every Breath You Take, I think it would be an international, at least recognizable song. And as Fred said, you know, because he was not in the chorus full time at this point. He had sort of semi-retired and was just coming back for things. But he said that, you know, we went from continent to continent until I became incontinent, and then we didn't grow any further.
Another joke he clearly told many times.
Yes, but it's a great joke.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure the first time you hear it, is, you know, it's funny. And by the ninth time you hear it, you're like, okay, Grandpa. But still, someday, God willing, I'm going to be Fred. That's the thing. So.
We can only hope.
Yeah, so overall, I think, personally, I would recommend it. But Brother Jay, your verdict?
Meh.
If you had a choice of Young at Heart or Dear Zachary?
Well, that's not fair.
Okay, it's not fair.
That's not a fair comparison, because Dear Zachary, I wouldn't wish on anyone. Because that's the total bait and switch. Yeah. This
seen
going
Dear
into
Zachary,
it,
Drew?
I have not.
Okay. Do not. Do not.
Oh,
do not,
it
do
is
not,
the
do
best documentary I've ever seen, but it will crush you.
Yeah. Don't. You have children. Don't. Just don't.
And of course, just even saying that, it's always better that people go into a Dear Zachary not knowing what they're going to get.
Yeah, they know, thanks, asshole.
They know it's going to be sad.
Hmm.
But it just does such a good job of crushing you.
No, we'll just spoil this for you, Drew.
No, no, we can't. You cannot spoil Dear Zachary. There's no way. You can't. You can't do it. It's wrong to spoil it.
It's wrong, huh?
It's wrong. I'm sorry. Well, I'm not going to let you spoil it.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least not on the podcast. You can do whatever you guys want. Independent of me, but I'm not going to let you spoil
Yeah, Brother E decided that he wasn't going to tell me anything about it, and then...
But wasn't it more effective that way?
I'm guessing that's a yes.
I will just say, Brother Drew, that feel free to look up the spoilers for this. Go ahead and look, and you will discover why Eric playing this up is a great documentary. You'll love it.
No, I didn't ever say you would love it. I said
yes,
it was,
you did.
I said it was the best documentary I've ever seen.
Uh huh.
just you know, pick a strong day. Don't watch it with kids.
Yeah, you should follow that. Follow it after Schindler's List.
No, if you and the missus want to sit down and have a good cry.
Mm-mm. Don't bring his lovely wife into this.
Have either of you seen the movie Junebug? It's like one of Amy Adams' first movies.
Ooh, I don't think so.
All right. Never mind.
Okay. Well, okay. Jason, have you seen Take Shelter yet?
No.
Okay. Okay, sorry about it. So
I've actually put it on my list because, we can put it in the housekeeping.
Okay.
I'll write it down.
I considered putting that dude's next movie on the calendar as like a blind watch for all three of us, but I don't know how that would go.
Yeah, worst case, it would be pretty good, but not great. Or it would be meh. Worst case, it would be Source Code. Actually, no. I think, what is it? I think our worst... The movie that I was most disappointed in talking about turned out to be...
Primer?
No. Turned out to be The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, because we were just so meh?
Yeah. It was like, meh. It was fine.
I can see that.
It was fine, and here's some weird casting, but otherwise, meh, it's fine. Not great.
It was so wallpaper-paste bland.
Yeah, compared to what came after it.
Yeah.
So.
But wait, what was the worst podcast episode ever?
Oh, I don't know. Well obviously Tiptoes.
I couldn't.
Yeah,
I was guessing Casablanca. Because you wouldn't even release it.
Yeah. No, I would say the Electric Grandmother episode that never took.
Yeah, the
episode 000.
Yeah, the first Electric Grandmother was bad because, you know, well actually, you know, turns out episode 1 is kind of bad too. But it was, you know, at least it was our first thing we threw at the wall. And the Casablanca would have been fine, still will be fine. It's still one of my favorite movies, so we'll eventually still talk about it. But as it turns out, when I was editing it, the sound quality wasn't great because we hadn't perfected that. And also, neither of us had our history right, so we were making fundamental historical errors that I could not edit around. It just became embarrassing. So I was like, no. But let me tell you, I will be prepared. I'll send you guys a little primer before we do Casablanca. Well, we'll see. Anyway, it'll come back. Okay, so Jason's a yay. A meh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Drew, was it worth it?
I recommended it, so obviously I think it's worth it. I thought it was even worth it as a rewatch, watching a second time after I already knew all the beats. I mean, it's... As far as documentaries go, it's pretty light. And pretty fun, and certainly unique. So I think it's worth a watch.
Yeah,
it's pretty light and fun.
No, it is pretty light. It does, you know. I mean, we talked about Dear Zachary.
It's sad stories of friends dying.
No, but it's
that's light and fun.
No, but it's not sad stories of friends dying. It is joyous elderly people who are all gonna die, but are we all gonna live? These people are living. And they're obviously really enjoying the experience.
Okay, Braveheart.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's light and it's fun in the sense that these people are doing something that's pretty silly and, you know, shticky, but they love it. And, you know, that part's fun. You know, real life sometimes gets in the way, and that's a bummer. But, you know, like you mentioned... you know, they approach it with that fascinating attitude of, you know, that we've all had a good run. So, you know, it's a bummer, but we're going to move on and keep doing what we do. And, you know, I don't have that perspective. So, I found that really interesting to watch, and it, in a really, you know, sort of non-dramatized human way. So, yep, worth it for sure.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's a nice, it's just, if, you know, if it was on TV, I'd probably give it a, you know, give it most of a watch. I mean, depends on what kind of mood I was in. But yeah, it's comparing it to most documentaries I watch, it certainly is, you know, uplifting and hopeful. I think it has that message. It's, you know, keep doing what you like doing. So, connections. Are you ready?
I can't wait for this one.
Yeah.
Young at Heart. Plot summary by Fox Searchlight Films.
Oh, boy.
I'm totally kidding. I got no connections. It's a documentary where the documentarians haven't done very much else. I think Stephen Walker directed a thing called Waiting for Harvey, which I think is about Harvey Weinstein and the Cannes Film Festival. And Sally George, the other director, directed a thing about siblings getting married in the UK.
By accident?
No, as a good thing, as a positive thing. So
it's about the royals?
No, I mean, like, just like the whole concept of siblings getting married and, you know, having romantic relationships with one another.
This is a film about ordinary people who decided to trace siblings they'd never met before, but then found themselves confronted by the greatest moral dilemma of their lives.
It's one of those taboos in society, isn't it, that you could contemplate getting physically involved with your sister.
When brothers and sisters grow up separately and meet for the first time as strangers and as adults, they can fall prey to an overwhelming physical desire for each other, a phenomenon now being described as genetic sexual attraction.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway.
I'm going to say no.
So there's not a lot of connections. There's not a lot of connections to 2001.
So to date, this is our first inability to make the connections?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I made... I mean, I didn't make any music connections. Yeah, this one just... I didn't even try. It would have been such a reach. Because there really is nobody in this film that's been
in
anything
else. In reaching, there is growth.
Okay, well, that's true. Okay, anything else about Young at Heart before we move on to housekeeping?
Nope.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
So, who wants to go first with housekeeping? I don't think I really have any housekeeping this week, so the floor is yours, gentlemen. Brother Jay, you mentioned you had housekeeping.
I'm waiting for your bait and switch where you have housekeeping.
Jeez. Oh, God. Okay, no, it's not a trick.
Are you sure?
No, I'm positive. I don't have anything.
Because now is your chance to be interrupting Cal.
No. Something's going to come up anyway. Hey, that reminds me of something. Yeah. No, there's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was... made it through the podcast from last week, which was Spaceballs. Made me laugh. But before that, earlier in the week, I re-listened to the 100th episode.
And?
So it just... It made me giggle and snicker. So, just, it was one of those things where it was amusing to listen to and go back and, hear Drew's words where he, you know, part of him felt that, he really wanted to be part of the conversation when you and I would talk about movies and he wasn't there. And, you know, it's just nice now that we're all three able to hear, be together and interact. So, today at work, I had an epiphany that, you know, we might want to pick some of the movies that we did as a twosome and just maybe do a quick review as a threesome.
Oh, yeah. No, we could actually, you know, one of the things that I have thought about was 2001 because, you know, if I were to do a master cut of 2001, I would have to listen to like six of our episodes because I talked for like 6 weeks about 2001 as I was getting more and more information. But, yeah, no, that's a good idea. Absolutely. I mean, we wouldn't necessarily want to take on the whole movie, maybe, depending on what the movie was.
No, maybe just, you know, just go over some high points, maybe even pick some pieces, parts out of the podcast of that episode and just kind of discuss it, and maybe revisit and or revise.
Yeah. Well, when I thought about
it, I would like to nominate Primer as the first one.
Oh, God.
I love that movie.
I'm not watching that again. So you and Eric are welcome to discuss that. I will call in sick.
So, Brother Drew, I understand you might have some housekeeping.
Yeah, the first thing I had was, I'm glad you found that song at the end of my audio. I was wondering if you were going to notice that.
What song at the end of the audio?
From last week?
Yeah, remind me.
Well, you put it in the podcast.
Well, I know, but you have to remind me what we're talking about.
He's playing dumb.
No, I don't. I don't even know what you're. I mean, I'm sure I edited it in there. I don't know what we're talking about though. Which song?
The hidden track.
What hidden track?
Maybe you should go listen to the end of last week's podcast.
Okay, maybe I didn't hear that. Jason, do you know what he's talking about?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so I didn't edit it into the show.
You did edit it into the show.
Oh.
At the end of the podcast,
it closes out the show.
Okay.
There's like a couple minutes of silence, and then there's a secret Sugar Ray song.
No. No way.
Yes.
You're putting us on, right?
No.
How did you edit it in there unknowingly?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
You didn't notice that after the closing theme, there was still like 16 minutes of podcast left?
No. There's no way.
Yes.
It may be more like 7.
Whatever, but...
Oh, my God. So, it was my vocals weren't even in there, right?
No, because that was only on my track. You and Jason had already hung up, and I just kept rolling.
Oh, that's funny. No, I had no idea. So, on our Spaceballs track, which should have been our Nirvana episode, there was...
Yeah, I was sad. I didn't think of it for that, but...
God.
But...
No, I have no idea.
So on the Sugar Ray's first album, Lemonade and Brownies, which I still think is quite a fun album, much better than their later stuff. They have a hidden track, and it's this really weird, like kind of like pseudo country song, and it's really bizarre. And if you let the last song on their album run for a few minutes, it just kind of pops up. So, I let my audio run for a while. Actually, longer than I anticipated, because I wasn't sure how to switch applications while still recording in Audio Hijack. Turns out it was more complicated than I thought it was going to be, and I was doing it on the fly, so it took a while. But yeah, so my audio file was probably 8 to 10 minutes longer than either of yours.
Yeah, normally I just cut that stuff off.
Yeah, I don't know how you didn't. I'm amazed.
Yeah, I don't understand your process this was an accident.
Yeah, because...
I don't understand it either.
Because it was perfect.
It should not have happened.
I was like, oh, he got it. Yeah. I didn't even know if it would come through.
Why I texted you today. That's what my text meant. I thought...
I was wondering why you were so excited about it, because I thought it was fairly a dud podcast.
No, I was told... I was like, well done. My hat's off to you, because I was like...
Oh.
So the two of you pulled it off, and well, so Brother Drew really shined here.
Oh, yes, you did, because
you did it so well. You tricked Eric's editing software into doing the work for him.
That is crazy.
No, I thought Eric had just played it like totally cool. Didn't mention it at all.
No,
not to me. Not even like even hint at it during the podcast. So Eric, just kind of let it roll.
No, I don't. Podcast, that's not my style at all.
I know. That's why I was shocked. We were both shocked. The podcast closes with the closing credits at 59:09.
And it's so 107?
And there's 6 minutes and 17 seconds after that. I bookmarked it. I actually have it. How did you not listen to it? How did you not notice there was six more minutes?
Idea. Well, I mean, I can see how it kind of could have been done. But normally I would just cut that completely out, but I bet you I just didn't see it. If there's like a long pause, maybe I just assume that I cut it all out. Oh, yeah,
how did you edit it in? That's, I mean,
No, that was a natural thing.
Well, it turned out really well. So
yeah, congratulations. Like I said, I was under the impression it was on purpose. So it was, like I said, skillfully done, sir. Well done.
That is crazy. So, actually, you know what? Give me like a minute or two. I'm going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back. I cannot believe that
neither can your brothers.
Jason, did you know that song?
I had heard it before. I like Sugar Ray, so.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a bad thing to say, but they certainly sold out, you know, after they had kind of their big soft rock pop hits.
Oh, yeah. And Mark McGrath was like ever present for about 2 years.
Yeah. And he's pretty unabashed about saying, you know, he's not really a great musician. And the whole reason he got into it was because he wanted to get chicks. Yeah, so he wasn't about being a musical artist.
Well, I mean, good for him that he could ride that gravy train, and then he was not ashamed of his reality, because you know he wasn't believing his own press at least.
Yeah, no, he made the most of it, but yeah, that I really enjoy that first album because it is all over the place.
I remember it being kind of crazy.
I mean, yeah, they've got like hard rock, they've got rap, they've got like straight up funk. And then they got that weird country song hidden at the end.
They're so strange. I'm boggled at how that made it past him. I'm so confused on his editing process.
Yes, this demonstrates to me that I don't understand at all.
I know, me too. I mean, I thought I had a grasp on it, and now clearly I have none. So it just makes me even more happy that he's talented enough to be able to do it.
He's so talented, he does it by accident.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Or he's so good, he doesn't know he did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the hidden genius, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the inadvertent genius. So, like, nope, I just happened to do it, so... Oh my god! So
I was actually really surprised. He never asked me about it during the week. But now I know why.
Well, I he didn't respond to the text message.
Yeah.
So I was.
You know, it may have also been disorienting because you and I were talking for a while before he came on last week. So I had 8 minutes of recording before he even popped on.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we were all kind of out of sync with each other when we uploaded our audio files. But
his track would have ended, and you would think at the edit point where he puts the closing credits that you would finish after that. I mean, I don't understand the editing process, so now I'm curious. Maybe we'll have him show us the process when I'm there for Christmas.
Yeah.
And we're back.
So
we spent the whole time talking about what an amazing editor you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
no, we were saying that, you know, the genius of it is that you're so good. You didn't even know you did it.
that's appalling. But funny.
No, that's kind of how, you know, someone's talented. That's a genius. That's a genius move.
That was not a genius move. That was an accidental move, but still I'll take the credit.
But yeah, you're essentially the Kanye West of podcast editing.
Oh, excellent. So, Brother Drew, I'm going to let you finish. But first, I'm going to let you know that Beyonce has had the number one album this year.
If you say so.
Okay. Anyway.
So, Brother Drew, your experience this weekend with Dad.
that was a great trip. I learned a lot of unexpected things. Things like, maybe I already knew this. You guys probably know this. Turns out I'm not very good at, expressing emotions.
Okay. What's a demonstration of how this?
Well, what really, made me think about it was, I never considered the fact that, as it turns out, our father might be better at expressing emotions than I am. This does not speak well of me.
Well, but temper that with the fact that it took him decades to be able to get there.
Yeah. No, it was a really good trip. The weather was perfect. I mean, it was hot. Dad was actually suffering from a little bit of heat stress on the second day, which was a bummer, mostly for him. But it was good. You know, we flew in, we found the camping spot we wanted, so we didn't have to hike too long, which was great for his knees and my legs. And yeah, we set up camp and then took off on a hunt for his brother's monument. And it was really interesting because when he and Mom had located it before, they came from the other direction. You know, they came from the trailhead up to the monument, and we flew into the lake, which is past the monument, and had to go back the other way. So he hadn't looked for it from this direction before. And it's been 15 years for him. And so he had as it turns out, he had a really good memory of what the spot looked like and like what kind of the vegetation looked like around it. And while we were walking towards it, he had me take the lead. So he was behind me. And it's a very, very thin path. And it's really overgrown. So it's less than a body width wide. So we were single file, and we came across this bend in the path where it kind of opened up, and there was a little bit different vegetation. There were some trees with a canopy off the path. And he said, this is what it looks like. You know, it was sort of just off the path here. And he was kind of looking at it. And he was describing his memory to me. And he was concerned that all of the like new growth foliage had maybe grown up right off the path and covered up the monument. So for like the next, it wasn't very long, but so the entire rest of the way, we were kind of looking off the path in the direction through like the thick grass and all of the cow's parsnip, trying to see if we could see this, you know, pile of rocks that was the monument through it. And he was starting to get stressed out. I mean, you know how he gets when he just kind of, he clams up and he gets quiet, and you can just kind of feel the tension.
The pensive tension.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he
very familiar.
Yeah, he wasn't talking at all anymore. And we were getting closer and closer to Ohio Creek. And it's a pretty big creek coming off Anderson Peak. And there's a bridge across that creek. And he knew if we made it to that bridge, we had gone past it and missed it. And so the closer we were getting to hearing the creek, you know, sort of around every bend, he thought we were going to see the bridge. And that would mean that we walked past it and didn't find it. And it was going to be a giant pain in the ass. If not, you know, an unsuccessful trip in the first place. So he was getting pretty stressed out, in his very quiet way. And, then we came around the last corner, and it was right there. It was off the path. It wasn't covered up at all. And I was ahead of him. So I was just kind of, you know how we do when he kind of gets in that mood, we kind of, dial up the jaunty. So I just went bebopping to it, and I was like, oh, here it is. And, yeah, so then he was rather overcome with emotions. I think he was, on one hand, very relieved that we found it. But also, it's a monument to his brother. So he was pretty moved to see it. So he had a moment. Yeah, and that made me reflect on how emotionally stunted I am. Because, it's not like I didn't feel anything, because I certainly did for him, for myself, for the moment. It hit me in the feels, but I was not able to express anything. So that made me feel kind of bad. Well, I felt like I was kind of hanging him out to dry. But it was a good moment. I learned a lot. I learned he has a really complicated relationship with the death of his brother.
I can only imagine. I mean,
that's... which I had never considered, but he actually said it outright that he owes a lot to his brother, and if Ken hadn't died, then he wouldn't have all the things in his life that he cherishes.
Yeah, including all of us.
Yeah,
that's true.
So I got to come up with a response like, yeah. I'm like, why am I such an asshole?
No, that's not being an asshole. That's just, I mean,
no. And besides, you have the best trump card of all. You went.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you went speaks volumes. And don't forget, our dad is he takes much symbolism in the actions.
True.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. No, it was good. I'm really glad I went, because it was a really good trip. It was a good time with him. But I got to gravy train the whole way. I mean, he set up all the logistics. He had all the camping stuff. I really just had to show up. It was less than 0.6 miles from where we were camping, as it turns out. So it's really close. It went really well. And I think he certainly wants to do it again. And he is buoyed with confidence now, and thinks that it could even be accomplished in a day trip with no need to camp overnight. So sort of drop off in the morning, pick up in the evening.
Oh, I think that's mom's stipulation. It needs to be a day thing.
Let me tell you, it was so hot that first day and so cold that night.
Well, it looks like it's a very tight valley.
It is. I was not prepared for how cold it was going to get.
It looks like it was, it's, for God's sakes, it's isolated as hell.
Yeah. And I think in, as a tribute to our Father's Day podcast, mom, snuck in an iPad for us in which she had rented Heat.
Yeah.
So we got to watch Heat together. He smoked a couple cigars with me, which is fun.
Excellent. It's all bonding.
While watching Heat. We almost made it all the way through Heat, but the plane showed up early.
Oh, man.
Which was good, because we certainly were ready to go. But no, it was fun. We had a great fire that night. And we were so cocky. We were like, let's just burn all the wood so we don't have to deal with anything tomorrow. In the morning, we were like, it's so cold. So cold. I wish we had some wood.
Hoist by your own petard.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. Why the urgency to push this?
Push what?
Because dad has been thinking about going, but you really motivated him to go and do this.
I've been thinking about it for a long time.
Yeah, but why?
I remember when he sent us the email when I was in college that he found that passage. So it's always been in the back of my, and especially after he and mom went and found it, it's always been in the back of my mind that
I still have the email.
Yeah, I probably do too. On one of my older computers, probably in on my Netscape email. But yeah, and you know, every time we go out to the cabin, we drive past the Johnson Pass trailhead, and it makes me think that this is part of the Anderson legacy that's right there that only mom and dad have seen, and they're not going to be around forever. And not only do we have our generation, but now the next generation, and if we ever want to pass that on. Yeah, we need to go locate it. And I also thought it would be fun to, to get some GPS coordinates on it and actually put a picture of it on a Google Earth layer. I've done that. I actually submitted a picture. It's not going to be the final one, because I'm sure dad has a much higher quality one. But I just wanted to go through the process. And it's actually been accepted into Google Earth and Google Maps. So the next time they update their photo layer, you'll be able to go to Google Earth and see a photo of the monument.
That was going to be my next question, is if you got coordinates. So my hat's off to you. Good job.
Yeah. I bought a little GPS unit for the trip. But yeah, I got a little Garmin handheld GPS unit. And it collected a great amount of data. I just had it. I had it tracking us the entire time, and so I've got almost 3,000 data points for that day and a half that we were out there. And I put in manual waypoints for the important spots, like the campsite where we stayed and the monument.
So you tracked it like the plane trip and everything?
Yeah. yeah, cool. I have a whole track.
So is it possibly doable to hike the peak?
Yeah. I mean, people do it. People even bike that trail. Yeah, and if you're planning on camping, I think it's certainly possible to hike in and spend the night and then hike back out. That'd be pretty easy. It'd be pretty daunting to hike up and back in the same day. I mean,
well, it's certainly
people more fit than me could do that.
It's 11 miles one way, so.
Yeah.
Do you mean like the peak?
Well, to Bench Lake.
No, but I mean, are you, Jason, talking about like Anderson Peak or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Can you plant a flag on the top of that, or is that just like a big old rock somewhere?
Oh.
Or is that impassable?
I don't know. There's certainly no trail. it's nothing's impassable, but.
Well, I mean, it would.
I think that would be a serious, serious effort.
Like, yeah, I don't know how. Is it pretty dense?
Yeah.
The high level of technical difficulty toward the top.
Yeah. I mean, even the trail, you can barely see your feet because the brush is so thick along the trail. Like, I don't know how people bike it. It looks really unpleasant to bike. And, I mean, we went back to the monument the following morning. And just from it hadn't rained, but just from like the morning dew, we were both just soaked. It looked like we'd been in a downpour by the time we got to the monument, just walking along the path and having to brush up against all the leaves that were wet.
How about animals?
You know, we saw a couple spots where some bears had laid down, and there was some bear scat there. Like right where the plane dropped us off, but we didn't see any animals. And the first day we were there, there were some folks across on the other side of the lake who were there doing some day fishing, and they'd been dropped off, then got picked up in really small, really tiny planes. So it took multiple trips. So there were, you know, four or five plane landings on the lake that day. So I'm sure that drove away most of the bigger animals.
There's fish in the lake?
There are. Yeah. I only saw really tiny ones. I don't know why you would pay a lot of money to go fish in that lake. Maybe.
It's not about the fish.
Maybe not. They seem to be having a really good time, though.
Oh, cool. Well, it does sound fun in a certain sense.
Yeah. No, I think it would be a blast as a day trip, you know, and, you know, as the way I put it is, as we rich guide it in, you know, that's a pretty sweet way to hit the sort of the pinnacle of that trail before it starts to go down the other side of the pass. And that makes it pretty easy. And like I said, it's just barely over half a mile from the lake to the monument.
Now, so would it be the least bit interesting to fly in and hike out?
You could do that. Yeah, I mean, you'd still.
I mean, it would still be at best, it's an 11-mile walk, and in reality,
yeah, it's a pretty long slog. I mean, I think 3 or 4 miles of that is what you're going to really get meaningful in a day and a half. I mean, the
you
whole
could
thing.
Do it because I think going out is mostly down. Downhill.
Well, that's what I mean.
Dad couldn't do it with his knees right now. I couldn't do it with my legs right now.
Oh, I'm a big fat guy. I couldn't do it at all. So it's, you know.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, but the coastal trail is about 11 miles.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's some people do that in, you know, a couple hours. Some people do that in a day.
Yeah, but you're not a mixed heavy dense brush, then not being able to see the trail and
right. No, and if you did it in the summer, I mean, it'd be a long day, but you could start at the top and make your way out.
Did you see the thing in the paper about the guy in the ice cave?
I saw the story in the news.
Yeah. Did you see this, Jason?
Nope.
It was down in the Portage area.
Yeah.
They were climbing or like hiking, really, right? This older guy and his young son and maybe son's girlfriend or fiance.
His young adult son.
Yeah. And they got to this point where there's like an ice cave, and they were going to take pictures in front of the ice cave or where the ice was overhanging. And dad warned the kid not to go backward too far, and he did, and the ice crushed him. And luckily they got him unburied and out of there, and he broke some ribs and lost a couple teeth. But it's fine.
Yeah, I think it was near an RV park or campground near there, because a bunch of people responded.
Yeah, pretty quickly. I think almost a dozen people helped dig him out of there, because at first they thought he was just DRT.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of Alaskan adventure I want to try to avoid. Although I didn't tell you, so Thursday, I had really, I was like really like food poisoning, kind of sick. I mean, not like on death's door, but really like homebound, for a couple days in a row. And, I kind of made it through work on Wednesday, but Thursday I just couldn't do it. So, and Journey went off to day camp, and when I picked her up, cause I did actually pick her up at the end of the day, since it was a short trip and I could get back to a bathroom in a hurry if I needed to. When I picked her up, it was the first time I had been there, and there's just a lot of students at that camp facility. It's all broken up into ages with, different age of campers and stuff. But I show up there, and, the lady counselor is like, when I go to the room to pick Journey up, she's like, oh yeah, just Journey, come on, get your stuff. And well, we had an incident today. I'm like, oh no. And she's like, no, Journey was fine. I'm like, okay, good. I said, yeah, we were canoeing. And I'm like, Journey went canoeing? And Journey's like, yeah, I went canoeing. I was like, that's awesome. You went canoeing. She goes, yeah, we were at Goose Lake and canoeing. And then, of course, I hope you guys have video. But then they heard fireworks. It's a video visual thing. They heard fireworks. And then they packed up the kids in the bus and took the canoe aboard and drove around for a little bit in the bus until the fireworks were over, and then they went back and finished their little camping thing. So I thought that was exciting. Turns out I looked at work, and it probably was fireworks. There probably wasn't gunshots, but the counselors were pretty convinced it was gunfire. And with the way things have been going in Anchorage lately, it is not surprising.
Well, I think I'd rather them be a little conservative in
In
instances such as these.
I wasn't fazed by it at all, but she just wanted to make sure I heard about it from her rather than from Journey.
I assume you heard there was a stabbing in my neighborhood?
I did not. In your neighborhood?
Yeah. You know how if you go further down my street, the cul-de-sac wraps around almost to the back of Mom and Dad's house?
Yeah.
The house that was built right behind them, where we used to dump all our grass. Yeah, the dad there was stabbed by his 20-year-old son.
Wow. Did the dad survive?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, somebody's getting grounded.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.